You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Tuned in to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, guiding your gridiron journey, none other than your host, former NFL lineman, Ross Tucker.
Oh, yeah, it is. But it's not just any Ross Tucker Football Podcast. It is a Monster Monday, presented, of course, as always, by DraftKings. I am Ross Tucker, former NFL offensive lineman, 5 teams, 7 years. Most of you know that, classic journeyman, but help me get this podcast network, which is pretty cool, and in addition to all the different media gigs. There's a lot to get to. Awesome interview with Tiki Barber, the Giants legend who's been in the news with some of his comments about Saquon Barkley. You'll hear from Tiki momentarily, which will be awesome, and there's been a ton of stuff that's going on around the NFL since Thursday, so I don't want to waste any time. You guys know the deal. Please spread the word via social media, at Ross Tucker NFL, at Ross Tucker Pod. Love those of you that rate and review the show. That's a great way to get a signed autograph from your boy. And love the patrons like Jake Crittenden. Patreon.com/RT Media. Be a part of the family. It's Tiki time. It's Big Show time.
The Big Show.
Always good to talk with guys that are Hall of Fame caliber players, as well as somebody I've gotten a chance to work with a couple times, the great longtime New York Giants running back, Tiki Barber. And Tiki, I guess I want to start with this. I know what you're doing on the radio and TV, and you've really carved out an awesome, awesome career for yourself. But for the people that aren't as familiar, can you just kind of walk them through what you have going now in your post-football life?
Yeah, I mean, it's been almost 18 seasons, Ross. It feels like forever, even though I still feel young, and that's because I have young kids. But it's been all media since I left the NFL. I started at the Today Show and then did a few other iterations of things, Yahoo, et cetera, and then ended up at CBS National Radio. And about a year and a half ago, I got flipped to WFAN, which is local and the largest, you know, terrestrial radio station in the country, at least as it pertains to numbers. And it's been awesome. Me and Evan Roberts do a show. But on weekends during the football season, after, I say, 3 or 4 years of grinding on the seventh and sometimes the eighth team, I got on a full schedule with CBS broadcast, calling NFL games with Andrew Catalan and Matt Ryan. So my weekends were all NFL, but Monday through Friday, I'm talking Mets and Yankees and Giants and a lot of Jets this past season because of the Aaron Rodgers drama. Every now and then we get into some hockey, but it's really basketball, just the Knicks. We don't talk about the Nets. But that's been my existence. And then raising kids. You know, I got six. One's at Princeton, your alma mater. One's down up at Brown, two 13-year-olds and a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old. So I'm kind of all over the place doing media, but also trying to be a dad.
Wow. That is wild. I knew you had several. I didn't know you had six. that sounds like a lot. Talk about just doing a game every week,
yeah,
and being able to kind of get into that groove and that rotation. It's funny because for me this past year, I did college and NFL. I was like the seventh crew for NFL and the second crew for college, but sometimes different play-by-play guys.
Yeah.
Sometimes different three-man booth with Jason McCourty, just me and Tom McCarthy sometimes. And I'm envious for sure of just being able to have same producer, same director, same play-by-play guy, same guy in the booth. And you were one of the few guys that knows what it was like for me this year to kind of be in a three-man booth at times too.
Yeah, so I did that, Ross. Your path, that's what I was on until last season. It was sometimes I was with Beth Mowins, and then I'd be with Andrew Catalan, but other times I'd be with Tom McCarthy. I also did some college games on radio. And so it's your mind just can't focus on process and routine like we're used to being athletes. You know, it's the same thing. Monday's the recovery day. Tuesday's the off day. Wednesday's, you know, first and second down, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It got challenging, but I knew it was the grind I wanted to be on. I didn't know I wanted to call games until I want to say 7 or 8 years ago. And my brother asked me to be in a 3-man booth with him when he was working at Fox. And when I did those games with him, they happened to be Giants games, so they were a little bit easier for me to prepare for. I realized how much I missed watching tape, like understanding what was going on and digging into the nuances of the game as it's evolved, because it's very different from when you and I were playing. It's a different game now, offensively. I think defensively it's even evolved. And so the challenge that you mentioned is real. But once you get stability and once you get on a team that's the same thing every week, one, you have a lot more fun because you see the same guys every weekend. But I think two, it just, you get into a rhythm, right? You understand your play-by-play man's cadence or female as well, because there's obviously female play-by-play announcers in this and in CBS. Like, you understand the cadence and it makes it easier to just have a conversation, because that's what we want. Like, sitting at a bar, talking about the game that we're all watching, that's what you want. And I think the more you have reps with the same crew, the easier it becomes.
You know, when you and I were together for the Super Bowl, I asked you about your football career, because I remembered that your name, I couldn't remember if you were a Hall of Fame finalist or semifinalist, but I knew that your name was up for it. And I remember thinking, man, his last year, he still had a really good year.
Yeah.
So, like, if he had played 2 or 3 more years, and maybe even that next year, if you had stayed with the Giants and they won the Super Bowl, like, that might have been enough to put you over the top, maybe, as a Hall of Famer. And I asked you, and I'll ask you again here, if you had any regrets about that, about not, you know, playing a couple more years to, you know, try to make a big push for Canton.
So I didn't play the game to get into Canton. You got to remember, I mean, my early years, I was just a guy. I was that Jag we always talk about. Just a guy, man. Returning punts, being a third down back. I had some, you know, some big games here or there, but I was just hanging on. And then Sean Payton in 2000 changed our offense, and it made it a lot like the St. Louis Rams, the greatest show on turf, where Marshall Faulk was used in so many different ways, catching balls out of the backfield and misdirection, and what Coach Pope, our tight end coach, used to call dick'em plays, right? Make them think you're going that way, but we're actually going out the back door. And I started to excel. And so at the end of my career, when, you know, I'd had 2 or 3 really great seasons, I had to make a decision about what I wanted to do with the future of my life. And I was getting beat up. I'm not big, Ross. You know this. I'm 190 pounds right now. I had to work to keep on 205. And I was getting 400 or so plus touches a year. And I just felt myself slowing down, not loving the game as much as I did. I love prepping. I didn't love preparing physically for the game. And so I walked away because of the opportunities that were sitting right there. As I mentioned before, with the Today Show and Football Night in America and some just other things that I had going on. And the Hall of Fame wasn't even on my mind. My brother played to get into the Hall of Fame. So I played for 16 seasons, and ultimately he was enshrined in Canton a year ago. So, I mean, I get it, and I understand why people think that I would have regrets. Maybe the timing of the Super Bowl sucked a little bit, but other than that, I didn't play to be a Hall of Famer. I played to be as great as I could be, and I left it all on the field. And when it was time for me to walk away, I walked away.
Do you think guys are more likely, Tiki, to regret retiring too soon or regret retiring too late?
Well, I mean, I think it's influenced by what you see around you as it pertains to the game. And I'll give you the perfect example. I mean, I grew up loving Walter Payton, but I also admired a guy like Earl Campbell. Now, I couldn't play like Earl Campbell because he was a brute. I mean, he would run through you. I still remember those old videos of him ducking his head and just running through a defender and his jersey getting ripped off. And I remember when I was second or third year, I met him and he was in a wheelchair. And it's not like he was old. He was probably 58 or 6, 7 or 8 at the time. And I remember thinking to myself, I cannot be like that, right? I want to be doing things and I want to be physical and active and play with my kids. And so when my body started to get worn down, I knew it was time for me to walk away. And when it was taking me 3 or 4 days to recover, I knew it was time for me to walk away. And in living in New York City, I had so many other opportunities. I just jumped at them.
Totally agree, by the way. I think you're more likely. I mean, if you retire too early and you miss it, or you miss a Super Bowl, you know, would that stink? Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's also kind of a short-term thing. Whereas, like, if you have negative, I always think now, here's how I look at Tiki, and I tell guys this, like, it's a scary thing to end it because it's your identity.
Yes.
And at least it was my identity. And also because you know you'll never be able to replicate that again.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think about now, like, how much money they would have to pay me to go back out there to take that physical risk of a serious injury, to take the, like, once you're on the other side and you've got good things going, you realize that there is life after football. And I mean, they would have to pay me now more than I ever made in my career. I mean, obviously I'm 45, like, I wouldn't do that, but like if I was still 32 or something, it would have to be a lot of money, man, for me to go out there and add that wear and tear to my body, the hits to the head with all the CTE stuff, and just take the there's always that really bad injury risk too.
And Ross, you, when we were playing, you and I, that CTE, that repeated head trauma, that wasn't a thing. They weren't even talking about that really. And I remember my last season, we played the Dallas Cowboys, and DeMarcus Ware, like, ripped across me to try to knock the ball out, and he hit me in the head and knocked me unconscious. I mean, I was out cold on the field. They got me up, took me to the sideline. I get to the sideline. They give me the smelling salts. Drew Bledsoe throws an interception 3 plays later, and I'm right back on the field, right? They didn't take my helmet. They didn't, like, they weren't sending me in to get evaluated. I didn't have concussion protocol, none of that stuff. You just went right back on the field, and now in retrospect, right? That's just, it's the stupidity of ignorance, because we didn't know any better. But I retired at the right time, because I was one of those guys that would not come off the field, right? I broke my thumb in a game. I said, tape it up. Didn't even take my glove off. Tape it up. Let's go. I broke my forearm. I played with it in 2000. I was one of those guys, because it's how I was raised in the game. And I would have been in a bad physical state at this point in my life, I think.
It's funny. I remember one time, Tiki, I started at right guard for the Bills in 03 at the Meadowlands against you guys, against the Giants.
Yeah.
And Bledsoe got knocked unconscious, and it was like he was sleeping on the 50-yard line at Giant Stadium, like, totally asleep. And I don't think he missed a series.
No.
I mean, like, you know, that was third down or whatever. We came off the field. Next time we went out there, he was out there. Like, looking at that now, like, that would never happen. And so we didn't know back then, but we do know now. And you still, your sons, you know, play college football. So
yeah.
Talk about that part of it, because that's interesting too.
Yeah, it's interesting. You're right, because they're both in Ivy League school. So the football is not, you know, it's not the high intensity of like being in a Miami or a Michigan or one of those programs. And, but it is still a physical game. And I remember AJ, when he was probably 12 or 13, he got a concussion. It was his first concussion. And thankfully he told us, right? He didn't just try to hide it. I would have hidden it at his age. He didn't try to hide it. And so we were able to get him evaluated. We took him off the field. He ended up missing the next 2 games. He was upset about that, but he understood. And I think teaching him at a young age that the long-term injury is not worth the short-term, what you think is glory, is something that they still understand. And even though they're playing now at college, one at Princeton and one at Brown, I think they realize that their body is the most important thing. The game is what it is, right? They don't have to and probably won't play in the NFL. Who knows what's going to happen, but they don't need to do it. I needed to do it, right? I didn't have any money. I didn't have any wealth or affluence with my mom just working as much as she did and not being able to make ends meet all the time. My kids aren't in that situation. So they play the game because they love it, not because they have to.
It's awesome. You know, you said something when we were together at the Super Bowl that really stuck out to me about Christian McCaffrey. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you said something like, You think he's like the best athlete that's ever played the position, or the best something that's ever played the position? I want you to expound upon that.
Yeah, so I was watching a game with my brother, and you know, we were watching like him do these things that you don't see running backs do. Like, you know, the hurdle that we see now with running backs, Juszczyk did it in the Super Bowl. Like, they just jump over guys, but it's more like a leap. Like, they're jumping up. They're not like hurdling. Now, my brother was a hurdler in high school, and he was a national champion indoor, and his form was like perfect, right? And it was running and running and lifting a leg and diving over. Chris McCaffrey had a touchdown run. I guess it was a reception, actually, and it was probably, I don't know, week 12 or 13. And he caught the ball. He had traffic in front of him. A guy is going down towards his ankles, and he perfectly hurdled him. Like, a perfect hurdle is not breaking stride. It's like going over the hurdle and still keeping your cadence intact. And he goes and he scores a touchdown. And I'm just looking at that like, who can do that? Right? That's a track move in the middle of a football game. And me and my brother looked at each other like, dude, this kid's the best athlete to ever play this position. And he's got the physical tools. He's tough as hell. He's dynamic. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. He's already got over 6,000 yards receiving and 4,300 yards. I mean, rushing and 4,300 yards receiving. And so he's on the verge. He's only 26 of hitting this rarefied territory. That is a running back that has 10,000 yards rushing and 5,000 yards receiving. There's only three of them: Marshall Faulk, Marcus Allen, and myself. Christian McCaffrey is going to get that before his seventh season, or he'd probably get 10,000 yards in two seasons. So he's going to be on a plane that most running backs don't get to. And I don't know if we appreciate it. And this is with missing the better part of two seasons.
So that's 10,000 rushing, 5,000 receiving. It's Marshall Faulk, Marcus Allen, and you.
That's it.
So maybe you should be in the Hall of Fame. Tiki, do you think you should be?
It's all about the narrative for the Hall of Fame. You know, I saw 1,000 yards receiving, and so I'm the only one returning yards, because I did punt returns and kickoff returns. So it's all about the narrative. The Hall of Fame is interesting. If they can create a story about you that is compelling and sets you apart, then you'll get into the Hall of Fame. Because you remember when TD, Terrell Davis, got into the Hall of Fame. He only had three or four really great years, but two of those were Super Bowls. And the narrative, the story around him was, can you write the history of the NFL vis-a-vis John Elway without talking about Terrell Davis? And the answer was no. I also remember when T.O., Terrell Owens, didn't get to the Hall of Fame. We were talking to Clark Judge, and I asked him, I was like, this is a no-brainer for T.O. He's second in all-time receiving yards, touchdowns, blah, blah, blah. You're not even having a conversation. And they created the talking point that, well, nobody wanted him. Right. He was great, but he was never stuck. In fact, Bill Parcells wouldn't even say his name. So there was this narrative about T.O. that made him less than he actually was statistically. And that's what the Hall of Fame is all about. And I understand that. And so it's about creating, or I guess pushing out, a narrative that people will believe.
Does it bother you that the running back position has been as devalued as it has been? It's gonna hurt a little bit, right?
Well, I think devalued, and as far as paying the guy, but if you have a great one, you know it. Like Christian McCaffrey, he's not devalued. Like, he's one of the most valuable players in the league. But I think it has become a position where they feel like one guy is not enough. They feel like you need two or sometimes three guys to do everything. Whether it's because a running back won't block. And now calling and studying games as much as I do now, I see why defenses have changed. And they'll mug a linebacker and they'll dog them for the simple purpose of attacking a running back. It's not to really get to the quarterback. It's just attack the running back. And maybe that running back doesn't know how to or is unwilling to block you. And so you mess around just by attacking the running back and getting pressure on the quarterback. And so the all-purpose guy is not really developed as much anymore. So I think that's the devaluation of the running back. But if you have a guy like Christian McCaffrey, trust me, it's not devalued.
Well, and it's certainly not devalued by the coaches. That's for sure, because they know how valuable it is. Check him out on social media, at Tiki Barber. Obviously doing a fantastic job with all of his different endeavors. Tiki, always great to see you in person, and thank you so much for coming on the show, man. I really appreciate it.
Anytime, Ross. Be good, dude. See you soon.
Awesome stuff with Tiki Barber, especially how about what he said about Christian McCaffrey. Wow, that's some pretty high praise when Tiki and Rondé Barber are talking about you like that. Speaking of high praise, there is nothing better than Labatt Blue Light. I had a bunch this weekend with my buddies from high school. Can't highly recommend, by the way, going on a guy's trip or a guy's weekend with your childhood or college friends highly enough. All I did was laugh the whole time. And I actually got to find out about their kids and their wife and the stuff you don't really talk about as much. Anyway, drink Labatt Blue Light. It helps you have fun. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York. You got to have something to eat too. Well, DiGiorno, they got the deal, right? They know that it's not easy to have any type of party on a budget. You got to have the perfect setting, perfect squad, perfect eats. Luckily, you are a game time mastermind. You know grabbing DiGiorno Classic Crust Pizza can bring home a dub because it's packed with half a pound of cheese, sauce, other toppings, and comes at an incredible price. Make the game-winning call. Grab a DiGiorno Classic Crust Pizza from the grocery store today. It's not delivery. It's DiGiorno.
Tuck's Takes.
All right, Ross, there's a lot of moves since Thursday. Let's start the big ones. Chiefs, they re-signed Chris Jones to a five-year contract that includes $95 million over the first 3 years, while Baker Mayfield, he's back with the Bucs for 3 years at $100 million.
So what's interesting about these two, Jack, is neither one's a surprise. People thought the Chiefs would re-sign Chris Jones. People thought Baker would go back to the Bucs. And also, I'm just so happy for these guys. For Chris Jones, you know, he wanted to stay. Baker wanted to stay. That's great money for both of them. And Baker especially, I think I put this on social media, I thought he might end up being like a journeyman backup. But he believed in himself. He bet on himself. And man, did it pan out. Good job for Baker.
Some more deals. Franchise tag players, they're getting new ones. The Bears, they ain't cornerback Jalen Johnson. And the Ravens, they signed defensive tackle Justin Madubuike, both getting long-term deals.
Doesn't often happen. If a franchise tag guy gets a deal, it's usually in July at the deadline. But these teams, I think, wanted to free up some cap space for this year. Makes sense.
Got some trades. The Patriots, they send Mac Jones to the Jaguars for a sixth-round pick. And the Broncos, they send wide receiver Jerry Jeudy to the Browns for a fifth and a sixth-round pick.
Jags want to make sure they have a better backup quarterback, and the Browns, I thought they would make the trade last year, make the move to get another receiver last year. They did not do it, and they realized they need somebody opposite Amari Cooper.
Speaking of draft picks, the NFL, they announced compensatory picks, and the Niners and the Rams, they lead the way with five. The Eagles, they have four.
Going to make this my Labatt take of the week, Jack. Presented by Labatt Blue Light, the pristine Canadian Pilsner. Enjoy your beers together so you can live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York. Am I the only person that thinks compensatory picks are insane? Why are teams rewarded for not paying a player who's performed well for them? There's a salary cap. Everybody has the same salary cap. Everybody has the same draft picks until they trade them or whatever. Why are teams getting compensatory picks? It's not necessary. It's ridiculous. I hate it. And evidently, I'm the only one that realizes it's insane that this is even a thing in the NFL.
Got a lot of signings. Tight end Zach Ertz, he signs with the Commanders. Dolphins, they signed tight end Jonnu Smith. Pat signed Chukwuma Okorafor and tight end Hunter Henry. Jaguars re-signed Ezra Cleveland. Chiefs re-signed Drew Tranquil. The Rams bring back offensive guard Kevin Dotson. The Raiders re-signed center Andre James. And the Eagles signed defensive end Brandon Graham for a 15th and final season.
Basically, other than like Ertz and Okorafor, it's guys re-signing with their teams before free agency starts. I mean, today is going to be nuts. At noon, when the period opens up, it's going to be wild as these guys are able to actually finally negotiate. These are just the guys that didn't really want to leave, and once their team gave them something like Tranquil and James and Dotson they're happy with, they took it.
And we got some more exits. The Broncos, they cut Justin Simmons, while Eagles legend Fletcher Cox, he retires after 12 seasons in Philadelphia.
Justin Simmons and Russell Wilson. I mean, the Broncos are not messing around, moving on from players. And for Fletcher Cox, just an incredible career. You know, I said this on social media, Jack, at Ross Tucker NFL. It is bananas that the Eagles have four linemen all playing at the same time for 10 plus years that'll never play for another team that are all Pro Bowl caliber guys. Like, that never, ever happens. It is extremely impressive what they've been able to do. I would say, too, Jack, the only other thing I thought was noteworthy since Thursday's show is just the Bills. I mean, the Bills re-signed David Edwards. They re-signed Taylor Rapp to safety. They bring in Trubisky. Then they release Tre'Davious White, release Mitch Morse, release Jordan Poyer. It's kind of wild to me that the Bills already have this, like, salary cap rebuild when they've only ever been to one conference championship game with this group. It's not like they did all the salary cap stuff and they won the Super Bowl. They didn't. They haven't even gotten really close to winning the Super Bowl. Anyway, we'll have more on Wednesday. I think we're done here.
Thanks for tuning in to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Make sure to also check out Even Money, Fantasy Feast, and College Draft, all on the DraftKings Network on Samsung TV Plus, YouTube, or subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform.
Shout out MyFrontPageStory.com. You guys know my promise. I guarantee if you get a story from MyFrontPageStory.com for a loved one, I will send you a signed press pass in the mail. You're not entering a contest. You're just winning. Love me some BackOfficeScheduler.com, SteakhouseSports.com, HumanHeadNYC.com, Sporticulture, and of course, Pizza Boy Brewing.